You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
G'day, Cam.
G'day, Rich.
Oh, hang on. I'm not hearing you.
You're not hearing me. Hello? Testing, testing.
There we go. That's better.
Testing, testing. How are you doing?
I'm good.
That's good, mate. Now, let me see. Who are we having on? Oh, Josh. I have to call his landline. 928-28201, so just give me a sec.
He's the tech guy for tech and science guy for the Bulletin, and he doesn't use Skype?
Yeah, yeah. That just about sums it up, doesn't it?
It does.
Hold on. Hold on.
Speaking.
You ready to do this thing?
I'm ready. How are you going, Cameron?
Good, mate. Let me conference in Rich.
That's good. Oh. Hi, Rich.
No, hold on. He can't.
Hi, not Rich.
Richard, invite to conference. Rich, are you there?
I am.
Oh. Are you there, Josh?
I'm here, Cameron.
Have you guys met before?
Hi, Rich. No.
No, we haven't met. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you going?
Oh, I'm very good.
Rich was just making fun over the fact that you're the science and tech editor for the Bulletin and you're not on Skype, mate. What's your excuse?
You've asked me this before. My excuse is that I'm just too lazy and my work pays for my phone call, so I don't really need to worry about it.
Fair enough.
It's about being cool, you idiot. It's not about, it's not about
I've got to admit, though, I think there's a correlation between technology and laziness, because I'm lazy as well.
Yes. Yeah, look, my latest sort of high-tech acquisition was a Bluetooth headset for my mobile phone, so that's kind of as good as it gets up around here. But and then a hands-free handset for my landline phone so I can type and speak and maybe even think at the same time.
That would have been a big spend for the Packers, wouldn't it?
I just lost you there. I think see, that's the other problem with technology is it doesn't always work.
Particularly when you mention Packer on a Packer phone. I think it's just, it's being edited out by somebody in the middle.
So the problem is, I know we've got sort of IP phones or something here, so maybe there's some sort of filter on the Cisco switch or whatever it is they use here.
That'd be it, yeah, filtering out the Packer word. So
that's right.
Let me introduce everybody on the line for the people who are just joining us. Richard Giles, recently retired media magnate from Perth.
I like how you say retired.
Well, I think of you as being retired. I think of myself as retired. How are you, Rich?
Yeah, I'm good. Enjoying retirement.
And Josh Glidden, science and tech editor for the Bulletin magazine in Sydney, Australia. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, and I'm most definitely not retired, unfortunately.
Now, one of your boss retired permanently a few weeks ago, Kerry Francis.
He did.
Baltimore Packer.
That's right. That's what Chuck Yeager used to call buying the farm.
He bought the farm. Yeah. Now, for our international listeners who may not have ever heard of Mr. Packer, he was the richest man in Australia and a bit of a character. I think a colourful character, I think, was the way our Prime Minister described him.
That's right. I think he did. Which probably the diplomatic.
Well, look, I think he definitely was a colourful character. I mean, he was larger than life, as I guess most people with that amount of money and that kind of presence, when you own as much media in a single country as Kerry did. What's it been like working for a Packer property since his passing? Do you guys really notice anything? Is there a change in the atmosphere, or is it just like business as usual and keep going?
At the Bulletin, I mean, where we are is actually in a building that is separate to the main, I guess, PBL building. So, we've always kind of just operated on our own over here. And it hasn't, yeah, to tell you the truth, for us, it hasn't really changed. I imagine within the corporation, things have changed a lot, but, yeah, we're kind of far enough away from it not to really feel it. I guess, because the only interaction that we really had was when he gave us the Christmas hampers every year, which is an absolutely wonderful and generous thing to do, and I know my family, a lot of families, got a lot of use out of that, but it wasn't like you heard in the old days where, you know, he'd be on the phone sort of ringing people up and doing that sort of thing. It never, as far as I know, it never really happened here, and I've been here for nearly 8 years, so it hasn't really changed much. Well, it might change as, you know, as time goes on, because I don't think you'll really see sort of that sort of media magnet come this way again in, here in Australia. I think it's going to be different from now on.
Until Eddie McGuire takes over all of PBL.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that, well, I saw speculation in the paper, but I know absolutely nothing about that one.
Yeah, the speculation is Eddie's taken over Channel 9.
You should explain who Eddie McGuire is, too, for the benefit of our international listeners.
Well, he's actually... He is. I mean, you've got to give Eddie credit. I mean, Eddie started off... He's a Melbourne boy. He started off 20 years ago as sort of the junior sports reporter on some of the radio and in some of the papers here, covering AFL, Australian Rules Football. I remember when I first moved to Melbourne, you know, almost 20 years ago, I'd tune into Triple M and Eddie would be doing the sports report. I think it was Triple M he was doing back then. And he went from being this junior sports reporter, and I remember being impressed with him at the time, thinking, man, this guy's a workaholic, because he would be everywhere. He'd be doing the morning news reports, like on the footy, he'd be doing other things in the day, he'd be in the paper, he'd be working weekends. He was kind of everywhere, Eddie Everywhere, as he's become known since then. And then he went on and sort of ended up doing a TV show about Australian Rules Football, hosting that, which became fairly popular amongst, you know, the no-neck football crowd in Australia. And then he went on to become, he's what, the president of Collingwood Football Team, which is one of the oldest and most loved football teams in Melbourne.
Oh, hang on, yeah, most loved, but also probably the most hated,
yeah,
as well.
Most hated by their people who don't follow them. And yeah, and he's, you know, he's obviously, and he's like one of the highest paid media personalities in Australia now. Is about the size of a bull elephant, has bought a number of multi-million dollar houses in our richest suburb in Melbourne. And now, so anyway, the rumour is that he's going to be taking over the top job at Channel 9. Is it still our number one television station, Channel 9, in the radio?
I think it still is. I think it still is one. So that's the thing, though, because he's a big guy for the Melbourne crowd, but here in Sydney, I think a lot of Sydneysiders, until he started hosting Who Wants to Be a Millionaire...
Oh, that was the other thing. Never, yeah.
That was the other thing. Never really got it, because, I mean, you know, I'm not a football guy, and I'm not a Melbourneite, and so, you know, I'd hear this fella's name, and go, who the hell is that? Why is it so interesting? But, yeah, then came a millionaire, as people call it, and I think people started getting it really quickly.
Mm. But, I mean, he's definitely, you can't get that far without being a player. I mean, he doesn't come across as the smartest guy to, you know, on television, on the radio, but I guess that's partially...
Part of the cover. Job. Yeah, it's part of the job of pretending to be a media guy, right?
He puts himself across as being, you know, a boy from the suburbs and, you know, an average Aussie battler. But, I give him credit for the fact that he has. I mean, he's fucking worked his ass off, and he's obviously very ambitious and very aggressive with his career path. So good on him.
Yeah, and people like that approachability as well. I mean, they don't like sort of, you know, snooty up themselves journalists like some of us. They prefer sort of real, you know, on-the-ground people they can relate to. And that's great. I think that's fair enough. Whether or not he'll get the top job, I know he's lobbying, but, you know, yeah. Who knows?
Well, if the past is anything to go by, he'll get it eventually, whether he gets it this time. Oh, he was also one of the top guys in the Republican movement. His brother was heading up our sort of Republican drive 5, 6, 7 years ago, and he was right up there in politics.
That died a pretty sad death, didn't it?
Yeah.
Hey, Rich, I noticed your first draft of your Flickr book has been completed. How'd that go?
Oh, man. The first book that I wrote didn't really go through a proper editing phase, and this one's going through an editing phase. But I also hit a bit of a wall earlier, and which I won't go into on this show. And and it's kind of dragged out a bit longer. So I ended up submitting everything a week later than I wanted to, and now I'm just going through the editing phase. I had to change some photographs because they were a slightly... well, they weren't pornographic, but they but certain people within the general population might deem them to be, especially in the US. And so we had to pull those, and because we moved those, then now I've got to change. I don't know. I'm confused now. So yeah, so it's getting there.
What was the first book, and why wasn't it edited? Did it have spelling mistakes in it?
Oh, I probably had a shitload of spelling mistakes in it. they probably gave up on the first page. That's probably what it was.
What was the first one?
The first one was the whole Internet Guide to Podcasting and Internet Audio, and it was about a 300-page book that was going to detail how you could listen to podcasts and how you could subscribe to them, and then give you about 100 podcasts to sample from. So it gave you a head start if you were a newbie into listening to it. But
this is the O'Reilly one. It's got a narwhal on the cover.
Well, that's the cut version of it. So they took 30 pages, actually they took 60 pages from the whole Internet Guide, and they took about 30 pages from Podcasting Hacks, which is another O'Reilly book, and they made about a 100-page book from it. And so that one's the Podcasting Pocket Guide with the narwhal on the front of it.
That's the one that I don't get a single, get a single mention outside of being in the URL for the Gadget Show.
Right? I was going to say, you're in it.
No. We're part of a domain name for your show. But hey,
and the story behind that, that everybody doesn't want to lynch me. No, I'm going to tell you.
Don't give me any fucking excuses, Rich. At least I got a mention in Podcasting Hacks. The one that you didn't write, I get a mention in.
Anyway,
so it wasn't pictures of Cam... There wasn't pictures of Cameron you had to take out of the Flickr book, was it?
Yeah, let's get on with this show. Now, I've actually got a format, and you're going to fit into my fucking format, you guys, because I was trying to hijack it.
You've never had a format, Cameron. What are you on about?
I know. Well, I did. Actually, G'day World had a format back in the very first three shows that we did. And then
what happened to it?
Well, we got bored. I get bored easily. And then we started doing interviews, and that was easier than actually thinking about anything. And now I'm bored with the whole interviews thing, so I'm back to a format. So you guys are going to do what I fucking tell you.
Okay.
So the format is starting with a bit of tech news of the day, which I normally grep is the word I was looking for there, from tech.memorandum. Interestingly though, what are you guys? Where's the first place you go for news of the day at the moment?
My RSS news feed.
Right, yes, is there a particular RSS feed that you read first?
No, what I've got is in my RSS feed reader, I've got a bunch of different categories, and I've actually got a must read section and then a whole bunch of other ones that never get read. But I go pretty well straight to that. And occasionally I'll go to news.google.com if I've been out of the loop for a couple of days, just for a quick snippet of anything major, like earthquakes or tsunamis or something like that.
Yeah, I am. I fire up my RSS reader, and I've got something called Science Blogs, which is a combined feed, and then there's Eureka Alert, which is which is run by the U.S. Academy of Science, and that's basically all of the news releases that come out of the universities and from Nature. So I read them, and I read Wired News and BBC, and then I go and read about cars. And that's pretty much it.
Cars.
Cars.
You're really the car geek, aren't you? You're not really the scientist.
I am the car geek when it comes down to... I'm not allowed to write about cars anymore, unfortunately, so I can only read about them.
Oh, that sucks. So all those jaunts that you had going to Germany and driving on the Autobahn, all gone now?
They've all gone. And I mean, I would only drive the fastest and most expensive cars, not the sort of cheap ones. So, yeah, it's all gone now. No more supercharged Mercedes-Benzes in my driveway, which is a real bummer. But it means I can actually focus on my real job, hence the science reading before the car reading in the morning.
Well, if you want to do a car show on TPN, I'd love to have you, mate.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting the cars out of the companies. Actually, they're not too bad, but I don't know, how interested are people in hearing about cars? Because often it comes down to, it goes real good and it's real expensive and
do the podcast from one of the cars, like doing 150 or something and recording a podcast.
I think Nick Mason, who's one of Weblogs Inc.'s top blogs, so people must be interested in something about cars.
Well, that's one of the ones I read. But I'm talking of sounds from cars. Nick Mason, who's the drummer in Pink Floyd, released a book a couple of years ago, and that had a CD with the engine sounds of all of the cars that he owns. I mean, he owns lots of cars, you know, Ferrari GTOs and McLaren F1s and things. And, so apparently you bought the book and you got this CD, and so all of the real car geeks could sit there at night, listening to the exhaust notes and engine notes of Nick Mason's cars.
You wouldn't jump in your car and just pretend that it was the engine sound of your car?
Well, that's when I was over in Detroit a couple of years ago, and we were talking about hybrid cars with the guys from General Motors. That was one of the questions that came up. People were like, we're driving these electric cars. You know, people like cars because they sound, you know, like, you know, driving a V8 or something. So what's an electric car going to sound like? Is it a drive song going beep, beep? Beep. And that was one of the suggestions, is that you could just synthesize the sound of a car and off you go. So, you know, you're driving there in your little hybrid electric pod car, and you press a button and it sounds like a Ferrari, and that would satisfy people's, I guess, need for a car to sound like a car and not just a transport module.
And you could have, like, little vents pumping in the smell of burning oil into the car.
You could. Well, there's a Citroen on the market.
And you can have, like, you can have LCD panels instead of windows showing things moving really fast past you. So the fact you're only doing 40 k's down the road, you actually think you're doing 140.
You would, but then you might get that weird sort of feeling when you're sitting on a bus and the car next to you moves and you're not sure whether you're moving or the car's moving. And I reckon it would be... You know, then you get people getting motion sick, and oh, it'd be terrible. I get terrible motion sick.
You already got me on my format, you fuckers. We're 16 minutes in. It's only supposed to be a half-hour show. We're 16 minutes. We haven't even got onto the tech news of the day.
Well, what is the tech news of the day, Cam? Come on.
Well, the thing that's rating high on Tech Memorandum is this new VoIP client called Tello. T-E-L-L-O. I've been reading Om Malik's blog about it. He's got a nice design on his blog, by the way. Om, he's upgraded it. Shout out to Om. What's happening in the cricket, Om? We don't care. Whenever I talk to Om, he always wants to talk about the cricket. What Pakistan and India are doing to the Aussies. So this is have you heard about Tello? It's a new VoIP client put together by Craig McCaw and John Scully, former Apple CEO, and Jeff Pulver. It's headed up by an ex-Oracle exec called Doug Renert. Based out of California, it's raised $5.5 million in Series A in the second quarter of 2005. And, it's interesting. They're really building it around this idea of presence, and which seems to be, you know, one of the buzzwords at the moment. And they're talking about how it's going to kind of sit in between a lot of the other PSTN and VoIP clients out there and really try and stitch it all together. The basic idea being, it's going to allow users to see whether people are logged onto their computer or their mobile device, or if they're on their office phone or their cell phone, or if they're logged onto IM, so you know exactly where and what devices people are logged into. Now, this is not a new idea, obviously. I know Microsoft's been talking about this for, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, but we haven't really seen a good implementation of it. There's so much division, I guess, between all the IM clients still today. No one seems to have done a really good job of bridging Skype and MSN Messenger or whatever the fuck they're calling it now. Name of the week they seem to have for that frickin' product. And, AOL, Instant Messenger, and all that kind of shit. So what do you think, guys? Do we need another VoIP client?
If it integrates everything, fine. But I just, I'm cynic about these sort of things. People talk about how it's all going to work and it's all going to be seamless, and then you get into the real world and nothing ever works and nothing's ever seamless. I'm talking on my mobile phone again. So, I'm a bit cynical about this sort of stuff, but maybe I've just been hanging around for too long and not actually using Skype like I'm supposed to be. Yeah. I don't know. What do you reckon, Rich?
I think they've got to make it really easy to use. Otherwise, it's just going to be another one of these that comes along. And, I mean, Skype is currently the most popular, and it's just going to be hard to get rid of because of the mere fact that it's popular, right? I mean, there's no good having presence if you don't have everybody on it.
Do you think it's more popular than MSN Messenger?
I don't know. No, that's probably a good point, but when you talk about VoIP, that's what people seem to say, right? I mean,
Yeah, they were really the front runners with VoIP, doing a good job of it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the others had it, right? I mean, I remember you could do it with Yahoo, and you could probably do it with all the others several years ago, but nobody really bought into it. I mean, the thing for me with Skype is that I can make Skype app calls. That's the important part. So unless they've got that, you know, you may as well forget about me using it for now. But it sounds like they're obviously going to build client for a whole bunch of different applications. And what they're going to have to do is stitch up deals with the telcos, which is just nigh impossible because the telcos don't want a bar of it because they just want to make money and VoIP isn't money for them.
But do they need to do deals with telcos?
Yeah, they have to, man. The telcos have mobile market. They're, unless the government gets rid of some sort of regulation around spectrum, they've got it stitched up.
But, you know, I can see a point in the not-too-distant future where my mobile will have an IM client on it. I mean, mine already does. I'm running a Pocket PC phone. But most mobiles will have some version of an IM client on it, which will kind of run in a similar fashion to SMS, won't it? So you'll be logged onto the net from your phone at all when you're out and about, and you can say, yeah, look, I'm currently logged onto my mobile instant messenger.
Yeah, true, which gives you the presence, I guess, but for me it's voice, right? Voice is the killer app. I mean,
My IM client already has the mobile thing, but I've never figured out how to tell it that I'm on my mobile. So, and it should be, you know, that's using Microsoft Messenger. So, but I think Rich is right. I mean, voice is the killer. That's what people want to use. And I don't think you're going to have real-time conversations, you know, some typing into a mobile phone.
No, but, you know, it lets people know what device you're logged into. So it can see that you're logged onto your office phone or your mobile phone or you're at a...
Which is really handy why?
Well, it is. I mean, there's a sense of presence. There's a sense of contextual awareness about the situation people are in before you try and interrupt them.
Fair enough.
I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, I as soon as I log on to IM these days, if I go visible, I get 400 people. Hello, Hunter. Don't touch that. It's my microphone, buddy. I'm doing a show. You need to tell me something? You're hungry.
G'day, Hunter.
He can't hear you, but Josh Glidden says hello, Hunter.
Get him on the show.
Yeah, I keep trying, but he gets mic shy whenever I stick him in his face. Hunter, can you run downstairs, play with Taylor, and I'll come out and make you a lunch when I finish the show. You're thirsty now. Hungry and thirsty. Well, that's... I'll come and get you a drink as soon as I get off the show. You're really thirsty. Okay, well, I'll really get you a drink when I finish recording the show. And then leave the microphone alone, please. I know I'm taking a long time, but these guys keep getting me off subject. Run along.
I think you need to have one of those post-mix dispensers in your studio.
Right now.
Or maybe a soda stream would be the go.
You guys
I'm thinking that the school holidays have obviously been on far too long now because Hunter's getting bored.
Yes.
Yeah, they've actually been banned from Game Boys and Xbox lately, so my electronic babysitters have diminished.
It's not got anything to do with the studies from the fMRI scans that people have been doing, finding that games are inducing violence and all that crap again.
Oh, fMRI. What a segue to fMRI, Rich.
That was a pretty good segue. I'm impressed.
Josh, what can you tell us about fMRI?
Well, I could have told you a bit, except I just killed all the stuff I typed out.
I can tell you that it stands for functional magnetic resonance imaging. It's a technique
where parts
of the brain are activated by different types of physical sensation or activity, such as sight, sound, or the movement of a subject's fingers.
That's right. And one of the things we've been looking at lately is depression and trying to use fMRI to determine the organic basis of depression. But one of the problems is that you can see all of the blood moving around in the brain. You can see the electrical activity in the brain. But if you can't then establish a benchmark for what a normal brain is and then go on and compare depressed brains, for example, and try to figure out what the organic basis of depression is. And, you know, obviously the reason we're talking about depression is because of the retirement of the West Australian Premier about 10 days ago, and he stepped down due to depression. And so we ended up doing a bit of a yarn on depression and trying to figure out what makes people depressed and why. And one of the things that came came out of that is that we don't actually know what the organic or the physical basis of it is. And so using these fMRI scans, you know, the boffins are out there trying to see how the brain's working in real time and why it's working, but we still don't know what the basis for depression is, and we still don't even really know how the antidepressant drugs work, because you start taking them and the levels of neurotransmitter in your brain goes through the roof the next day, but it takes between 2 and 8 weeks for you actually to for your feelings and behavior to change. So again, we don't really know what the deal is there. So that's what I've been looking at, is fMRI and trying to figure out how the brain works. Because the thing about the brain too is, it's not like, you remember Da Vinci, you know, back in the day would cut cadavers open and you could actually see the anatomy and see how it works. The brain doesn't work like that, because you can't really cut it open and see how it works. And so I guess fMRI is one of the attempts to get in there and image how it works, but even though you can see what's happening in the brain, you can't really see why it's happening or what it means. So there you go. That's fMRI in a nutshell, as far as I can tell. Have you been fMRI'd?
Well, I've been MRI'd. I had an MRI.
You've been MRI'd.
Have you been to my blog lately, CameronRiley.com?
I have been to your blog, actually. Was that, this is the result of the horse or something, wasn't it?
No, this wasn't the horse. No, this was the...
It wasn't the horse. It was the clay pigeon.
It was the clay pigeon machine, yeah. So that
that's right. Sorry,
on my blog is actually an MRI scan of my brain. Which, and the big question I've got about MRI is, when you go into the, you know, you go into the magnet tunnel, is when I was in it, if you got claustrophobic, you'd freak the fuck out, because there was like, I don't know, 3 inches between the top of my body and the top of this chamber. And I was thinking, what happened if, you know, they all just went away? All the doctors.
And you were stuck in there.
I couldn't get out. I didn't have enough room to move. I was on a sliding chamber. There's no way I could get out. Oh, that's a bad crackle. Is that coming from you? Yes. Can you hear that, Rich?
Yeah, I can.
Got a bad crackle on your line, Josh.
Oh, on my line, really?
I think so.
Those chips.
I'm going to cut you off, man, and call you back.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. Hang up, dude.
He's gone.
Him. Hey, Rich, I'm gonna have to kill the whole call, because if I don't, Skylook will not
freak out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
I'll call you back in a second, man.
No worries. Yeah, hello.
Hello. All right, I'll try him again.
It's interesting how it shows you the number that you're calling.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Are we back? Are we still cracking?
No, I can't hear.
We're not
it,
cracking.
It definitely went away when we cut you off before, though. So whatever it was.
Oh, that's a bit strange. I couldn't hear anything. I mean, I'm just using a headset plugged into my landline, so there shouldn't be any interference. Who knows? So you're talking about being trapped in an MRI.
Yeah,
it would be like a bit of an electronic float tank.
Well, actually, I actually thought it'd be a good plot for a film. You know, you're Bruce Willis. You're going for an MRI scan. Something happens, and they, you know, some you know, virus hits, wipes out everyone in the hospital. How the fuck do you get out of this thing? Anyway, that was my paranoia when I was stuck in the MRI chamber.
Isn't this sort of like the Andromeda strain for the 21st century?
Something like that, yeah. So,
something like that.
But it is fascinating as we start to get lower level understandings of how the brain works. And, you know, guys like Kurzweil have been predicting this for a long time, that we're going to get down to a level where we really do understand molecule by molecule what's going on in the brain through things like higher resolution MRI.
So my question, do the doctors, do they talk about it? I mean, you know, because obviously you see this information, and the first thing that pops into my head is that it sounds, and here we go, here's an analogy that you'll like. It sounds a lot like measuring how well a car is performing by checking the oil flow, because all it's really doing is checking where the blood is going, which obviously is important and it impacts the way the brain functions, but there's obviously a lot more to the brain that we're not really looking at and tapping into.
There is, and that's what, yeah, Katzfeld goes into that. I was reading some more of his stuff this morning, because he says something along the lines of, you know, you can get the computational equivalent of the brain, you know, in the next decade or so, but actually having the software component, I think, is going to be much more difficult. And I think that actually feeds into something that Cameron and I were talking about once before, is that if you had some sort of machine intelligence, you can't necessarily assume that it's going to, that intelligence will manifest itself in the same way that our intelligence does. I think that's one thing that people really miss. They assume we're going to get these intelligent machines and you're going to sit there and talk about the cricket with them, and I just don't think that's the case. Mm. But I don't know what you guys think.
Well, neural activity, if we just look at the way the brain functions, I mean, there's little doubt that neural activity is driven by blood flow, by the biochemical solution that the neurons are in. It's flowing past them at any given point in time. So if we can track all of that activity, we can actually track what the stimulants are that are associated with different kinds of neural activity. But how that then translates into the brain is a completely into like AI is a completely different issue, because we will architect AI brains to operate differently. Where it becomes more challenging, though, is when you get into a Cory Doctorow scenario of uploading memories and being able to rebuild a person. And rebuild their memories all into a machine. But the way that Kurzweil and these guys have been talking about that for 20 years is that, you know, if we can do a non-invasive molecular MRI scan of your brain, if we could actually chuck you in a machine now and do even a destructive MRI scan molecule by molecule and actually track every molecule in your brain at a given point in time and then rebuild it based on that molecular blueprint exactly as it was, for all intents and purposes, you've got to think that you're going to be exactly as you were when it, you know, when it scanned you.
At that, yeah, you'd have a state, you'd have a replication of state, but whether that state would then, you know, I don't know whether you could, you then rewind from that state and, you know, discover where it come beforehand, or could you then from that point on, you know, would, what would happen? So I think you'd get a picture of state, but I don't know whether you'd actually get a complete manifestation of the person. Do you see what I mean?
As in, so would they, happening in that, at that particular point in time, but they may not even remember the history or their past, and you wouldn't know what came before, is what you're sort of saying.
You wouldn't necessarily know what came before. And I guess, is it, you know, if there's any sort of uncertainty principles involved in what's happening in the brain, then would you be able to capture that? So, I think it's tremendously complicated, and I think that Katzfeld is wonderfully optimistic, but and I think that we will have some sort of machine intelligence in the next 20 years that has self-awareness, but I just, you know, I don't know whether you'll be able to, whether, I still don't think that intelligence will manifest itself in the same way that our intelligence does. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, hopefully it's far more intelligent than we are, because we're fucking things up. The other news...
Well, that's good.
The other news that's out today is that Google News is now out of beta.
Only took
3 years. Yeah.
Really?
Wasn't the reason they hold everything in beta so they don't get sued, because they don't have to deliver a complete product, and they can just say, well, you know, you used it, it's a beta product, you know, you can't hold us responsible for any screw-ups that go with it. I think that's the thing with Gmail. It's still in beta, and, you know, 98% of the world uses Gmail, but if it crashes, you know, who cares? Like, nobody can hold them responsible for it.
But I actually think it's quite
clever. Do you use Gmail?
I've used Gmail for the last 2 or 3 years religiously. I run off it, and I love it. But I think that all software is always in beta, right? Software's never finished. It's always a work in progress. I don't think I've ever used a piece of software that should really be considered to be a released product, because they're always flaky.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the guys at the Web 2.0 show were talking to... What's one of the guys from 47 Signals? You know, 47 Signals.
37 Signals. Jason Fried.
37. Yeah. See, I was just adding another 10 years onto them.
I did an interview with Jason Fried for the Productivity Show a couple of weeks ago. Nice guy.
Did you? Yeah, he was, and he was basically saying that he didn't believe in the beta. He figures that when you launch it, you should launch it and at least make it, you know, stable for the customer, and don't hide behind it and don't use it for marketing and all that kind of stuff. So, interesting stuff.
Mm. That's good different perspective, I guess. I mean, what do you think, guys, so think what about do you think Google News?
I basically don't use it, so I don't have much of an opinion on it. But you know, there's always the talk that, you know, these machine aggregators were going to replace the roles of editors, and you know, in choosing what's newsworthy and what's not newsworthy. I just don't know whether that's the case or not. I mean, do you guys use it?
Yeah,
Do you read Google News?
Yeah, absolutely.
I use it all the time. I mean, I agree with you, though. I think that there's a place for editors because, I mean, Dig, I believe, is a great example of how useless a service can be without people like editors and stuff like that. Because to me, Dig is just like those email chains that you get from people that you really don't want to read, you know, and they send it to you in PowerPoint format or something stupid. So that's Dig to me. Whereas Google News is already edited news, right? I mean, it comes from news sources that have been edited. And usually the headlines and the top headlines are, you know, bits of interesting news that have already been produced somewhere else. I mean, I use it in part. I don't use it completely. I use it with a whole bunch of other things, but I do find it a really good resource for something quick. And for me, it's great in checking out, you know, if I haven't seen a news story and I want to do a bit of research, you know, like fMRI, for example, you do a quick search in there and you can find, in the last month what's been talked about.
So I suspect the situation for me is a little bit different because we have access to Factiva, which is a Dow Jones thing. So, and that's really like an expensive clipping service that's in real time. So I can sort of, being a journalist, I can sit here and search that, but most people aren't going to pay for access to Factiva. And so Google News is great because it provides a lot of the functionality without the cost. And that's probably, there's probably something in that, actually. It just occurred to me. I don't know what we pay for Factiva. Factiva is great, but Google News probably does provide a lot of the functionality without the cost.
It's interesting. I mean, and then, you know, we'll get on to one of Cam's favourite topics, John Battelle's The Search Book, which I haven't completed yet, but the repercussions from here on in of using Google, whether it be news or whether it be the search or whatever else they've got, is, you know, in a few years' time, they'll be able to start suggesting things to you or notifying you of things because they know your search patterns. You know, if they kind of know the topics that I'm interested in and they're almost all something to do with technology, then it can keep an eye out. I mean, it's already got, I notice, and it must be a new service that they've launched just out of beta, is the recommended for richard.giles@gmail.com, which is obviously my login to Google News. And it's got a selection of news items that it thinks will be of interest to me because it's been keeping a track of what I read.
Yeah, I mean, but aren't you kind of self-editing that through your RSS reader anyway? I mean, how much additional news is it going to bring in by inferring what you want as opposed to what you've already self-selected and self-edited through your news reader?
Yeah, true. Yep, good point.
Well, you know, I agree. I mean, I like to customize my news, and I do that through sort of keyword searches on the news. I use Google News and a little bit of Yahoo to do Google searches based on keywords, and I have RSS feeds built around those. I also have, Technorati RSS searches around these things, so I can see what the blogosphere is talking about around my key subjects. So I'm kind of building my own news. But I think Google News has been a really interesting experiment over the last few years to try and figure out what the key stories are around the world. So I give them some credit for that. Hey, let's move on. Something that's in The Age today is my mate Ben Barron. There's an article on blogging in The Age. And it's talking about his new search engine that he's now calling News, GNOOS, which is news to me. So, Ben, I know you're listening to this show. Thanks for not giving us the fucking exclusive on that, you prick. You had to go talk to The Age. Good on you, mate. But well done for getting a link in here. So it says a new search engine called News aims to link up the thousands of voices in the Australian blogosphere pursuing the usual sporting, political and foodie interests, along with a scattering of chattier offerings such as Zucchini and Bikini and Aftergrog Blog. I have no idea what those are, but I think they're blogs. They are blogs, yes. They're even linked to inside of The Age's online site. Imagine that. Noose will be rolled out in February in the form of a pre-beta teaser. That's the brainchild of Melbourne company Feed Corp. So shout out to Ben Barron and Michael Corleone, my Melbourne startup compatriots, who have launched this. Ben's been on G'day World a couple of times. Supposed to be on last week, but he pulled out. So there you go. And it also talks
maybe
about...
Maybe he's going to announce it.
Did you know the Blog Herald got sold last week?
No. Bloody hell. Who do you sell it to?
It does. It says there's an unnamed buyer. If Money Talks, reports of last week's sale of the Australian BlogHerald.com for $72,000 to an unnamed buyer is a further sign that the market is growing up. Isn't Duncan... Duncan's doing B5 Media. What's he selling it to... maybe he sold it to B5 Media. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. Interesting, though. He's a WA boy. I think he's down Perth. South or something.
Oh, yeah, Bunbury.
Yeah, yeah.
Bunbury, not Perth. Bunbury. Well, Duncan, if you're listening to this, again, thanks for the exclusive, you prick. I guess you probably do it. It's probably an exclusive on B5 Media. But congratulations. $72,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money for Blog Herald, though. That's a big site.
It's
one of the top Aussie blogs. So there you go.
Interesting, because they get a fair few hits. Interesting stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, so there you go. Some Aussie boys making the news. There you go. Oh, you see, I just flicked over to Blog Herald and see that he's got an article here saying that Weblogs Inc. is to launch a Second Life blog. I've been trying to find something to do a World of Warcraft blog podcast for me for quite a while. We should get one on Second Life as well. I'd love to listen to podcasts on that kind of stuff. Anyone out there in Second Life or World of Warcraft, you want to do a show for us, let me know. You still
actually,
on the line,
somebody
Josh?
Contacted me the other day.
Josh is off the line. When did Josh disappear?
No, he's gone.
Yeah. I wonder if this is still recording. Well, it says it's recording. Let me call Josh.
You got to get some new recording software, mate.
Can you recommend anything?
Yeah, Mac.
Fuck off.
Hi, your friend Josh Quinn. I'm sorry. Please leave me a detailed message with your name, number, and time, and I'll get back to you. I'm often out of the office, so you can get me on 0408697862. 0408697862. And please bear in mind I don't come into the office at all on Thursday, so mobile is best. Bye.
Yeah, Josh, we just played that voicemail message over the show, mate, so I'm going to encourage everyone listening now to call you up and spam bomb your voicemail account.
We're mostly interested in is the fact that you said you weren't in retirement, but you must be in semi-retirement because you don't work on Thursdays.
Yeah, and you don't come into the office. What's going on, mate? All right, thanks very much, Josh. Don't know what happened to you, mate, but thanks for playing while it lasted. All right, well, he's gone now. Hopefully this is still recording. Well, I was just going to wrap it up anyway, mate, because I think we've probably done a good half hour of crap here. I was going to do a little bit of Australiana. I've been doing a couple of things lately. I've been doing Word of the Day from etymology.com or Etym Online.
And you pick some good ones?
Well, no, I've just been picking crap at random that interested me. But the one today that I like is the foundations of the word bad.
Yeah,
it first shows up in 1203.
What, not on Michael Jackson's CD?
Apparently not. Apparently this predates Michael Jackson, although he took it to new levels, of course.
Yes.
Apparently it started showing up in 1203. Now, it's a mystery word. No apparent relatives in other languages. Possibly, though, from two related Old English derogatory terms, one baidel and baidling, which mean, wait for it, effeminate man, hermaphrodite, pederast. So if you were
that bad, explains the Michael Jackson thing completely. I understand now.
It pretty much does, doesn't it? That's fucking creepy. Like, this is in 1203, you know, and how could they know that in 1993...
Michael Jackson would sing that he is bad.
793 years later, Michael Jackson would appear. Now, originally, the term bad meant defective, inferior, or a sense of evil or morally depraved, and that's first kind of recorded around 1300. Now, it says it's a rare word before 1400, and evil was more common as a description until 1700. ironic use of the word as a term of approval, as in, hey, man, you are bad. You one bad motherfucker. Is said to be at least since the 1890s orally, originally in Black England, emerging in print in 1928 in a jazz context. Badder and baddest were used as recently as Defoe, 18th century, but yielded to comp, worse, and superlative worst, taken over from evil and ill, and then from PGMC. I don't know what that means. There you
go. What do they mean by Black England? What's that mean?
Well, the black population in England, I imagine.
Okay, fair enough.
So there you go. So the word bad, don't know where it comes from, but it's, you know, it's only been in ironic use since, well, I always took it as being a jazz thing, you know. There you go. That's the word bad. You want bad mofo.
Well, you won't be saying that anymore, will you?
No, well, you know, people don't know what it means. It means you're a hermaphrodite.
Yeah, that's right.
Being a hermaphrodite would be cool, though, wouldn't it?
Well, no, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nah. You think so? Why do you think so?
Oh, you know, you could have it both ways.
Yeah.
All right, and then the other thing I've been doing, mate, is a bit of Aussie slang. Got any Aussie slang for us today, Rich?
You put me on the spot. Have you got one up your sleeve just in case I don't have one?
I've got shitloads, mate, but what's your favourite piece of Aussie slang?
They're all boring, man. What? You've got to give me till the next show. I'll have a think of the next show, because there's some guys in the office. Yeah. There's some guys in the office that have some beauties. I just can't remember them right now.
Well, the one that I've got here for today is a gutful of piss. Now, very early on in your day, well, we explained that piss means alcohol in Australia. And if you're pissed, and I don't think that's necessarily an Australian term, but yeah, you know, if you have a glass of piss, it means you have a glass of beer. It's not just alcohol, it's beer, right? And a gutful of piss means you're drunk. So if somebody says, oh, mate, I had a gutful of piss last night, it doesn't mean someone was urinating in his mouth. It means that he drank a lot of beer and got very drunk. So, that's the show for today. Richard Giles, thank you for joining me. What have you got on for the rest of the day, mate?
The rest of the day, I've got to do some work on some web pages for product launches and stuff like that that'll be coming up in the next few months. And I've got to edit chapter 10 and fret about a whole bunch of image changes that I made in the first edits that sound like I've completely balls it up and need to go in and remark the edits or something or another. I don't know. I'm totally confused. So I've got to have another cup of coffee, and hopefully my brain kicks in and I'm able to figure all of that out.
Fantastic, mate. Well, I hope it goes well for you. And I'll talk to you tomorrow, you bad man.
And hopefully you won't have had a gut full of piss.
Hopefully. See you, buddy.
See ya.
Real power can't be given.
It must be taken.